නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ ඒකායනෝ අයං භික්කවේ මග්ගෝ සත්තානං විසුද්ධියා ශෝක පරිද්දවානං සමතික්කමාය දුක්ඛ දෝමනස්සානං අත්ථගමාය ඥායස්ස අධිගමාය නිබ්බානස්ස සච්චිකිරියාය යදිදං චත්තාරෝ සතිපට්ඨානාති. Dear Dhamma friends, as you all know, we are discussing Satipatthana Sutta these days. So in Satipatthana Sutta, now we have completed discussing Kayanupassana, that is the mind establishment of mindfulness using the body, and then Vedananupassana, establishing mindfulness using various feelings, and then Chittanupassana, establishing mindfulness at various mental states. And then Dhammanupassana, we are now in the last section. Actually, we have completed about the hindrances, and then we discussed about aggregates, khandhas, and then we discussed ayatanas, that is sense bases. And again, last time we have completed Bojjhanga, that is the enlightenment factors. And today we hope to discuss Saccha, that is the noble truths. Now, as we discussed even earlier, so this whole Satipatthana Sutta is somewhat developed or preached in a kind of a progressive manner. So it starts with some very basic practices, and then it, as the yogi develops it or practice it, it gradually leads him to the other levels of understanding. Say, for example, when he starts Kayanupassana, so as he develops Kayanupassana, then automatically, naturally, he'll start to deal with Vedanupassana. So that is the feelings. So it's a kind of a gradual process. It happens in a natural way. And as he practices Vedana, the feelings, and Kayanupassana, at a one given point, he may be able to recognize various mental states, and those actually leads to Chittanupassana, that is the understanding of the mind. So he has the capacity to watch the mind using its mindfulness. He uses mindfulness as a kind of a base, as an oasis, as a vantage point, and while being there, he is now able to look at the mind and to understand various mind states, various thoughts, without being driven by them. Now, typically what happen is, when we get any kind of a thought, we immediately grab it, we immediately attach to it, and we hold it, and we consider it as mine. So as a result, we become a victim of it. But now the situation is different. Now the yogi has understood there's a possibility of recognizing various feelings, thoughts, without being attached to them, without possessing them, without being driven by them. So this is where the difference. So while being mindful, while standing on the mindful island, say space of mindfulness, and then he is able to observe various thoughts. Now, any of these Kayanupassana, Vedanupassana, Chittanupassana, Dhammanupassana can be looked at in a different framework. So that is what we call as noble truths. So Kayanupassana also can lead to understand four noble truths. Vedanupassana also can lead to understand four noble truths. Chittanupassana also can lead to understand four noble truths. And Dhammanupassana also can be used to understand four noble truths. But anyway, in Dhammanupassana specifically, Four Noble Truths are included. Actually, if we consider the section of Dhammanupassana, it is fairly preached or kind of developed in a very progressive manner. If someone couldn't understand some deeper teachings of the Buddha, all those deeper teachings are included there in a practical sense. So one has to practice these teachings on his own way, and Buddha has given the guidelines, so one has to practice them. So as one practice, then he is able to understand very deep aspects of Buddha's teachings. Now, in the Noble Truths, so this framework is somewhat similar to the Ayurvedic approach, where there is a kind of a disease and there is a cause of disease and there is a freedom from disease and there is a path to freedom from disease. So this is a kind of a model that we can even recognize in today's Ayurveda or the say this recovery systems. And there is a kind of an argument whether Ayurveda copied this kind of a model from the Buddhist teachings, or even, or the other hand, these models or this framework was there even before the Buddha's arising. However, so it is quite a common framework that to wherever possibility one can apply, there is a kind of a disease, there's a kind of a illness, and there's a cause for that illness. And then one can understand, okay, there is a health state as well, the freedom from illness. And there is now a path leading to the freedom from this illness, the kind of recovery of that illness. So this model is fairly available in the Four Noble Truths. So the first noble truth is saying there is suffering, that is the dukkha satya, and then there's a cause of suffering, unsatisfactoriness. Sorry, there's a cause of unsatisfactoriness, and then there is a cessation of this dukkha, unsatisfactoriness, and there is a path leading to the cessation of unsatisfactoriness. Path leading to the cessation of dukkha. Now, anyway, there is a big argument about the proper terminology which has to be given for the term dukkha, because you know the term dukkha is a fairly wider or broader sense that Buddha has used. Now, if we consider kind of a very minute, very subtle resistance available in the mind, say suppose you are simply driving a car and you are being stopped by a traffic light. So at that time, assume that you become little impatient. So there's a little resistance to the existing situation. So this traffic light does not give you permission to travel further. So it has made you stopped. So there could be a little, very subtle resistance in your mind. So this is also dukkha. Now assume that there is someone, while you are driving, someone is cutting you off, overtaking you. So there may be a little growing sort of a resistance, kind of a resentment, kind of a anger arising in your mind. So this is also dukkha. Assume that you met with an accident, and there you say got injured, and assumes that bleeding happens or whatever things are happening. So there are kind of a bodily kind pain is there. So this is also dukkha. And assume that you go through real major situation and kind of a critical situation. There's extreme suffering, very critical suffering, serious suffering is there. So this is also dukkha. So therefore, we can understand. So all these range of from very minute type of resistance to extreme dukkha, extreme suffering is included with the framework of dukkha, with the term, umbrella term dukkha. So therefore, it's difficult to say it is the suffering, it is the unsatisfactoriness, it's a kind of a range of dukkha. So that is what we are trying to discuss under the dukkha satya, the noble truth of suffering. We'll use suffering or unsatisfactoriness interchangeably. Anyway, you need to understand it's a broader term that is included in the Pali term dukkha. Now, when we consider the dukkha satya, now it is typically what we go through whenever we go through any kind of unsatisfactoriness, we immediately possess it, thinking like, oh, why am I suffering? Why is it happening to me? Poor me. Every time it is happening to me, everyone else is living happily. All the problems are happening to me. So likewise, we take everything personally and we get entangled in such kind of a thinking. Now, in the dukkha satya, it is not like that. So there are dukkha being observed objectively. So there is no kind of a possessiveness, rather there is suffering, there is unsatisfactoriness, and one can look at it objectively. Say for example, if we go back to Kayanupassana, say you are doing some walking meditation. So there your leg is touching the ground, foot is touching the ground, there you can recognize some hardness. So hardness is a quality, element characteristics, and it is not yours, it is not you, it is not yourself, it is simply hardness. And hardness can be objectively looked at. Hardness can be objectively observed using some mental process. Now this is the approach that we have to take in each and every noble truth. So the first noble truth, therefore Buddha mentioned, idam dukkhang ariya sacchang. There is this noble truth of unsatisfactoriness. So there is. It is not my unsatisfactoriness. It is not that I am suffering. Rather, there is suffering. There is unsatisfactoriness. So now you have to look at it. You have to understand it. So the first of all, the theory part of the noble truth, first noble truth, is that there is unsatisfactoriness. So that you need to recognize it. So whenever your body is going through any kind of a pain, any kind of a, say, sickness, any kind of a subtle resistance, any tension, stress, whatever it is, so that you need to recognize. It is not yours, but it is unsatisfactoriness. It's a pain, it's a tension, it is a stress. So likewise, at that moment, you have to recognize it. So this is the theory. So this is how we need to operate on it. And not only that, then Buddha mentioned, idam dukkha ariya sacchang parinyayang. So you got to understand it properly. From all the possible directions, from all the possible ways, you need to properly, very well understand this suffering. So rather than we try to get rid of suffering, here we need to understand it. So the approach is entirely different. Typically what happens is whenever we go through any kind of an unsatisfactoriness, any sort of a suffering, we immediately want to get rid of it. We want to go away from it. But rather now here, we have to be brave enough to recognize it and even to understand it, properly investigate it. So this is where the difference. So every time, whenever our bodies or mind is going through any sort of resistance, unsatisfactoriness, say uneasiness, pain, despair, whatever it is, so that we need to recognize and also we need to properly understand it. And then once you fully understood it, then Buddha mentioned, dukkhang ariya sacchang parinyatang. So now you have understood the suffering. Now you have fully comprehend the suffering. Now you have fully understood the unsatisfactoriness. So you haven't get rid of it maybe, but you have properly understood it. You have taken it to the consideration. You have taken it to the mindfulness. Mindfully you are observing it, recognizing it. So this is how we are understanding it. Now in this situation, we can recognize three stages to each truth. The first stage is the pariyatti. That is where kind of a statement, kind of a theory part. So this is idam dukkhang ariya sacchang. So there is unsatisfactoriness. There is some uneasiness. There is resistance. So this is the field that we need to work out. So that is the pariyatti, that is the theory. And on which, what to do there? So in the dukkha saccha, what we need to do is to understand. Parinyatang. So that is the theory, that is the kind of the implementation part. So that is we call patipatti. That is the patipatti. And once we have implemented that methodology, strategy, then we come to a kind of an understanding, kind of a realization. So that is where we can say, okay, I understood suffering. Now there's a realization. So that is in Pali called Pativeda. So Pariyatti, Patipatti and Pativeda. Pariyatti is the theory. Patipatti is the way we need to act upon it. And Pativeda is how we have realized it after we properly act upon it. So these three stages can be recognized in all these three, four truths. So therefore, four truths, and each truth has these three sub-stages, and ultimately there are 12 states or 12 stages. So therefore, typically mention four noble truths, Chaturarya Satya, and 12 kind of a folding, that is where the Dvadasakara. Now, Buddha mentioned before he understood fully all these four noble truths and each aspect of the noble truth, what is suffering, and then what is cause of suffering, what is the cessation of suffering, and the path leading to the cessation of suffering, till he properly comprehend it, he haven't declared that he is a Sammasambuddha. But after he understood it fully, then he confirmed, he declared that I am a Sammasambuddha. I am a fully enlightened Buddha. So therefore, you can see there's a kind of a very significant significance in this understanding of Four Noble Truths. And again, as I mentioned, you can recognize Four Noble Truths using Kayanupassana. You can practice Four Noble Truths using Vedananupassana. You can practice Four Noble Truths while in Chittanupassana and again in the Dhammanupassana. Now, when it comes to the first noble truth, the noble truth of suffering, as I mentioned, so it's a kind of a wide range of understanding, that there could be very subtle, very minor kind of a resistance, from there to kind of more resistance, more aversion, more anger, more trying to get rid of, and there may be severe pain, and all these are included in the first noble truth. It's a wide range of dukkha, unsatisfactoriness. Now, what is the cause of the suffering? Now, cause of suffering, Buddha mentioned as the tanha or the craving. So this also we need to understand. So there may be various other causes, but here the significant cause, the important cause Buddha mentioned is the tanha, the craving. So that is the teaching, that is the theory of the second noble truth. So there is cause of suffering. What is that? So that is the tanha, that is the desire, that is the craving, that is the attachment. So in many different ways, so this tanha. Tanha is the cause of suffering. Craving is the cause of suffering. So what we need to do on that? So that is the patipatti, now we are coming on. So what we need to, how we need to act upon it? So that is where Buddha mentioned, dukkha samudayam ariya satchang pahatabbang. Now this cause of suffering has to be let go of. Now in the previous one, it was mentioned the dukkha has to be understood, parinyatang. But here in the second noble truth, Buddha mentioned dukkha samudayam ariya satchang pahatabbang. You need to let it go. Rather than trying to fulfill the desire, rather than try to satisfy the desire, rather than try to gratify the desire, one has to let it go. So this is a completely different approach. So you are recognizing there's a cause of suffering, that is the craving, there's a kind of a desire, and that desire has to be let go of, rather than implementing it, rather than satisfying that desire. And again, when it comes to desire, this tanha, so Buddha come up with threefold or three categories or three types of tanha. Kama tanha, bhava tanha, and vibhava tanha. Kama tanha is the sensual desire. Say as human beings, we all desire for very beautiful sights. We all like to listen to music, songs, whatever the beautiful songs, sounds. And again, we like to sense various odors, incense. And again, we like to feel good, delicious food, the taste. And similarly, we like to have good sensations. That is the tactile sensations, tangibles. So these are called panchakama, the fivefold kind of sense gratification. So this is, all to these we have kind of a desire. And this is called kama tanha.
Actually, before we come to that, we even little explained about the dukkha, where different kinds of dukkha further Buddha has mentioned. Jatipi dukkho, jarapi dukkhang, maranampi dukkhang, appiyehi sampayogo dukkho, piyehi vipayogo dukkho, yampicchanna labbati tampi dukkhang. Likewise, in the first sermon, in Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, Buddha elaborates various kinds of suffering. So, while getting a birth, one may go through some sort of a suffering, some kind of a pain. And while one getting old, one go through some sort of uncomfortable, uneasy, difficult situation. So that is also dukkha. And during the deathbed, one may go through some severe pain or some suffering, and that is also dukkha. And if you have to associate someone who is whom that you don't like, so that is also suffering. And there could be a possibility that you have to depart apart from you have to be away from your loved ones. Then that is also causing suffering. And ultimately Buddha mentioned there, and again Buddha mentioned that if you are not getting what you want, that is also suffering. Assume that you want to pass an examination but you got failed. Assume that you wanted to sort of get a increment, but you didn't get. You want to get a good job, but you didn't get. You want to get a promotion, but you didn't get. So what? Likewise, so you are desiring something, but you couldn't get that. So as a result, you suffer. As a result, you become stressful. So likewise, various ways of suffering Buddha mentioned. And again, ultimately Buddha mentioned Sankitena Panchupadana Kanda Dukkha. So attachment to any sort of the aggregates, it may be the form aggregate, it may be the feeling aggregate, it may be the perception aggregate, it could be the formations aggregate, and even the consciousness aggregate. If whenever kind of a clinging happens to any of these aggregates, so it causes unsatisfactoriness. It causes suffering. Now this is how we are, Buddha is taking us more and more subtle or deeper levels of dukkha. So starting with very obvious kind of suffering, some sort of physical pain, physical illnesses, and mental despair, sorrow, lamentation, and all these are sort of suffering. And ultimately, once we go to the very subtle aspect, once we go to very mental related causes, there Buddha mentioned even the attachment to five aggregates, clinging to five aggregates itself is suffering, causing suffering. So likewise, Buddha explains the First Noble Truth in detail, and that we need to understand. Now, it is not simply by listening to a Dhamma sermon or reading a book, but while we are going through suffering, we need to understand it. So that is how we need to apply this noble truth to our lives. Now, no point of simply understanding the theory if we are not practicing it. So this practice has to be included in our own lives. It is not that we remember it and maybe go into an exam and then write it and then we pass it and we say that we know Four Noble Truths. That is not the point. Rather, as we live our lives, then and there, we need to look at whatever the unsatisfactoriness, whatever the resistance, whatever the mental pain, whatever the bodily pains that we are going through, we are experiencing, that we have looked at in this proper angle. We have looked at them objectively and try to understand it. Then we are actually practicing First Noble Truth. So we have to practically recognize various kinds of dukkha, and there we are actually practicing the First Noble Truth. So it's a kind of a lifetime practice. It is not that you simply know the names and the terminologies and their meanings, and then you say you know Four Noble Truths. Rather, from your own life, experientially, you need to apply these teachings, apply these formulas, what we are discussing today, in your own life, in your own mind, in your own body, and recognize all these, and then we can say, okay, now I am practicing Four Noble Truths. Now I am trying to understand Four Noble Truths using my own life. Now, after mentioning about the First Noble Truth, Buddha goes to the Second Noble Truth. So that is the cause of suffering. And the cause of suffering is mentioned as threefold craving: Kama Tanha, Bhava Tanha, Vibhava Tanha. Kama Tanha is the sensual desire, and that is various kinds of desires we have as human beings. So we like to see some beautiful sceneries. We like to listen good music, beautiful music. We like to feel good incense. And then we like to taste some delicious food, whatever the good tastes. And again, we like to gratify our, say, body using some good sensations, good tactile sensations. Now, this is common to all the human beings. This is common to all the animals. This is common to all the sensual beings. Now, this kind of a desire is available within us, so that is why we are in this world even. This whole human realm is kind of a sensual realm, and even the celestial realms is a sensual realm. So the people or even the celestial beings are looking forward, are attached to trying to satisfy their senses using these five chords of sense pressures. So kind of a pressure-driven principle is there. As much as possible, they try to gratify their senses: eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and the body. So they are trying to satisfy their senses using sights, sounds, smells, tastes, and the tactile sensations. Now this is where the sensual desire, Buddha explains as one cause of suffering. We'll further analyze how it is causing suffering. But anyway, so there's a desire, and one type of desire we all have is the sensual desire. We like to experience beautiful sceneries. We like to experience some good sounds. We like to experience some good, pleasant incense. We like to experience some tasty food, good, delicious tastes. And again, we like to experience some pleasant sensations. So this is a kind of an inherent kind of a desire we all have. So this is a sense desire. This is a kama tanha. And then Buddha mentioned another subtle side of tanha, craving. It is called bhava tanha. Sometimes translated as desire for existence. But that is actually a more broader way. But rather, if we apply it to the very minute practical way, so every time if we consider our mind, we are not satisfied. We are not completely fulfilled. Something is missing. Now if you consider your own mind, your own life, are you satisfied? Can you say that you are completely fulfilled? I am completely happy. I am fully contented. So you are not typically. So that's why Buddha mentioned uno loko atitto tanha dasu. This whole world is something kind of una, not completely fulfilled. Something is missing. Atitto, not satisfied, tanha dasu, has become a victim, a slave to the craving, to tanha. So this is the typical nature of all the beings. All the worldly beings are acting like this. They never satisfied. Very unlikely that they become contented. They are maybe even millionaires, billionaires, but still not happy. They still don't feel that they are completely satisfied. They still want more, more and more. If you have one car, now you need to have another car. If you have one car, you need to go for a better one, brand new one, a latest model. So likewise, every time we are not contented with what we have, we are looking forward to satisfy something more and more. So we are being driven by this desire. So currently, at this moment, at this very moment, you are not satisfied. So you are now expecting to satisfy in the future. So there's always looking forward, always looking to the future, always trying to become. Assume that you are in a some sort of a position in your job, kind of a designation, and but you need, you are not satisfied at, if you are not satisfied at this level, so you want to get promoted, you want to have a promotion, you want to get more money, you want to have a good salary, you want to get an increment. So at the moment you are not satisfied, but looking forward for the next kind of a situation, next promotion, next increment. So likewise, we are always driven by this desire. So we always have a kind of an ambition, and that ambition is driving us towards the future. So always looking forward to the future, and currently I am not happy. If I get that, I will be happy. If I marry her, I will get happy. If I say get a child, then I will get happy. So once my child being sort of become an adolescence, then I'll be happy. So when he get a good job, then I'll be happy. So when he get recovered from his illness, then I'll be happy. When he get married, then I'll be happy. So likewise, we are looking forward to so many things during our whole life. So always at the moment I am not happy, but if this happens, then I am happy. If this happens, then I am happy. So this desire is driving us. So this is the desire Buddha mentioned as desire to become. Desire to become something else. Desire to become someone else. So this desire is driving us. This desire is Bhava Tanha. This desire is looking forward. And if you are not satisfied in this life, now you are trying to even to have another life, future life, so that you can be satisfied. Assume that you couldn't fulfill your all desires within this life. Now you say, okay, I'll be reborn in this and this place. So I did a lot of meritorious deeds. With the power of all these meritorious deeds, may I get a heavenly birth in the next life. Now you are wishing even a next life. So you like to exist more and more so that you will be satisfied. You want to get satisfied. So this is how the very present moment desire to become leading to some future events and ultimately even to desire for another future birth. It's a kind of expanding kind of a desire. And then the third category Buddha mentioned, Vibhava Tanha. So that is where we want to get rid of. Assume that you are going through some suffering, unsatisfactoriness at the moment, and you immediately want to get rid of it. I hate it. I don't want to experience this. I want to come out of this. So likewise, you sort of hate it. You are refusing it. Rather than accepting it, you are refusing it. You are rejecting it. You are resisting it. So this resistance, this rejection, this desire to get rid of is called Vibhava Tanha. Now these three types of tanha, craving, are fairly interwoven. Assume that you are going through some pain and you want to get rid of it. Now the Vibhava Tanha is there. And you want to become more free person or more recovered person, more a comfortable person. So there's a kind of a desire to become. Bhava Tanha is there. And once you are being there, you want to enjoy. I mean, you know there's a kind of a very beautiful, pleasant state of life, and you want to experience that. You want to have that. You want to enjoy that. Now there's a sensual desire. So all these three types of desires are fairly interconnected. And these are operating very subtle way in our mind. Now, when it comes to the tanha, Yayan tanha pono bhavika. So there Buddha mentioned pono bhavika. Now it even cause to give you future birth. Now as we discuss using the bhava tanha, you are not satisfied at this moment and you are desiring a next moment, more happy moment in the future, or more happy state in the future, and more even happy birth in the future. So that actually leads to another birth, pono bhavika, future birth. So this is kind of a desire, therefore tanha, leading to an ongoing sansaric travel. So we are simply not desiring only at this moment, but this moment desire, future desire, desire to become has grown and it is inherent and it is leading even to a future birth, to a next life. Yayan tanha poni pono bhavika nandi raga sahagata. So when you are desiring, it's giving you some sort of a delight, attachment. And this desiring is generating some kind of a delight. So that is why we are desiring. Still we haven't satisfied, but even the thinking about it, wishing about it, imagining about it gives us a lot of thrill, lot of delight. Nandi raga sahagata. It has some sort of a delight as we are desiring. Tatra tatra abhinandini. Then and there you satisfy. Abhinandana. Then and there you become sort of, once you are attached to something, so there mind get attached and mind is trying to get some sort of a satisfaction. Mind is trying to get kind of a delight. So these are certain aspects Buddha mentioned available in the desire. So these three kinds of desire has that sort of a hidden delight. So as we are desiring it, as we are imagining that I am going to have it, I will do this, I will do that, if I get this, if I become this, if I become someone, not this at this moment, but in the future, if I become someone, if I get a promotion, whatever it is, then I'll be happy. So it's a kind of a imagined happiness. So we are thinking and then internally generating kind of a delight. So we desire. Now, Buddha mentioned in the... Now, if we apply this little bit to practical sense, to our kayanupassana. Say you are going through some sort of dhatu manasikara. So you can look at various bodily characteristics, element characteristics, hardness, softness, roughness, smoothness, heaviness, lightness, heat, cold, and cohesion, fluidity, and etc. So all these are kind of changing phenomena. Now this change, this impermanence, are also causing suffering. So that is another very profound teaching that Buddha mentioned. Yang anicchang tan dukkhang. Whatever is impermanent, whatever is inconstant, is causing unhappiness, is causing unsatisfactoriness, is causing suffering. Say for example, at a given moment you are happy, but that given moment does not exist long time, it becomes something else. And then immediately you become unhappy because you are attached to some other state. It may be a physical state, it may be a mental state, but it has now become something else, completely a new state. So this new state is not generating that previous, it is completely different from the previous state maybe. So you become unhappy. Say for example, if we come to a typical, say, country situation. Suppose you assume that kind of a certain group, kind of a political group, come into the power. And you expect some happiness through that, satisfaction through that. And you expect kind of prosperity through that. And then assume that they win the election, then we are happy. But after some time, they change. They can't stay at the same level. So they change. So now you again become unhappy. So similar situation is available in our whole life. So every time we desire, but this desired state can't stay longer. It constantly change. It is an impermanent situation. So during the in the impermanent field, we are trying to fix something. We are trying to kind of a permanency. in the impermanent flux that actually causes suffering. Yang anicchang tandukkang. So whatever is changing, whatever is inconstant, leading to unsatisfactoriness, leading to suffering. Now, if we are able to experience this changing nature in the element characteristics, if we are practicing Kaya Anupassana, so there you can understand, so it can't give you permanent happiness. So whatever these bodily characteristics are constantly changing, they are not remaining the same. They don't have long lifespan. So all these element characteristics changing from moment to moment. It is very transient. So from this side of kind of transient situation, how are you expecting to have a lasting happiness? It is impossible. So if you are able to look at element characteristics using this angle, so while from practicing dhatu manasikara, you can apply this Four Noble Truths. So you are experiencing element characteristics and it is suffering because it is changing. Constantly they are changing. They are not remaining at a single state, a desired state. They are constantly changing. And assume that you want to have some kind of element characteristics, but it didn't happen. You want to remove or get rid of kind of a element characteristics, but still it is remaining. So likewise, they are not obeying your desires. They are not obeying your wishes. So it is giving you some unsatisfactoriness. So you recognize this unsatisfactoriness using element characteristics. And once you recognize the unsatisfactoriness, understood their unsatisfactoriness, probably now you can look at why this unsatisfactoriness has arisen. To which am I attached to? What is the desire causing this unsatisfactoriness? So you can understand, recognize this cause, the desire. So during our meditation session, we can understand that. Assume that you want to know more and more details of the element characteristics. But still, they are not visible. You couldn't get sharp mindfulness. You couldn't get, very one-pointed mind. So therefore, you couldn't get the very sharp, clear picture of element characteristics. So there was a desire, but you couldn't fulfill it. So there could be a little resistance. There could be some unsatisfactoriness. Today, my meditation session was not successful. So you are now sort of regretting about it. You are being disappointed about it. Now this is suffering. There you can recognize it. So what is the cause of suffering? There was a kind of an expectation in your session. While you are sitting, you expected something. You expected kind of a blissful experience. You expected some satisfied result. So that you couldn't get. You didn't get. So you become unsatisfied. Now you recognize this desire. So if you are able to let go of that desire, so that unsatisfactoriness may be disappeared. So now the unsatisfactoriness has ceased. Because you have let go of the desire. Now there's a freedom. Now there's a cessation of suffering, cessation of unsatisfactoriness. Now you recognize that cessation. Actually, we'll discuss these last two truths on next week. So, and there you can recognize the cessation of the unsatisfactoriness. And you are applying this theory, applying this methodology again and again. So that is a path. That is the Fourth Noble Truth. So likewise, you can use these Four Noble Truths in Kaya Anupassana. Similarly in Vedana Anupassana. Assume that your body is aching. There's a pain. So rather than trying to get rid of this pain, now you can recognize, okay, this is suffering. This is pain. This is painful. That is kind of a unsatisfactoriness. So you recognize that pain. Rather than trying to get rid of it, rather than trying to immediately change the posture and trying to get rid of it, you recognize this pain. So there you are operating on the First Noble Truths. And what is the cause of suffering? So you may have imagined some kind of a free state which is free from this pain. So there's a future inclination towards freedom from this pain. So that is actually adding a new dimension to the pain. The pain may be assumed that is a kind of bodily pain. Pain is simply at a bodily pain level, but you desired a freedom from that pain. Very satisfied, present experience, or there's an imagined satisfaction, imagined state. So that is actually causing suffering. That is the actual cause of suffering. The real bodily pain is not the real reason of suffering. Rather, you have kind of an imagined state which you couldn't fulfill yet. So that is actually causing suffering. So that is the desire. So that is the desire to become Bhavatanna. So that you can recognize while you are meditating, say while you are doing Vedananupassana. Now assume that this recent desire has been let go of. Now you don't have any mental suffering. Even though body may be going through some pain, still you can observe it with an unshakable mind, with an unwavering mind, with a very equanimous mind. You can observe the existing pain. Now there is no any mental unsatisfactoriness. Now you can recognize this freedom from unsatisfactoriness. And as you are practicing this again and again, so now you are practicing the fourth noble truth. So to these four noble truths, therefore, regarding the first noble truth, that we need to understand it. Regarding the second noble truth, we need to let go of it. Regarding the third noble truth, we need to realize it. So once the desire has been let go of, once the unsatisfactoriness, dukkha has ceased, so this pleasant state, the calm state, peaceful state has to be recognized. Now this path, this methodology, strategy has to be applied to our own lives again and again. So there is a path. There is a practice that we need to practically do. So that is where the fourth noble truth. So we'll discuss the third and the fourth noble truth on next week. So with that note, I'd like to conclude today's sutta teaching. Now I open the session for questions. Jennifer, are you there?
Yes, Bhante. I haven't received any questions yet. And for all those on the phone, you may also raise your hand to ask your questions directly. Okay. Namalka, please unmute your mic.
Yes, Bhante. You know, I was, while following what you were saying just now, when I'm seated meditating, yes, I recognize my knees paining, and there is a desire to straighten my leg. At that time, because I do the Mahasi method, shall I say, desire, and I find that sometimes it leaves me, that desire, and I'm concentrated at that time. So that is the third one you were saying, where I recognize it, and then as if it's the pain is not there anymore. And then I continue to sit. But sometimes the pain is too great. So I was just wondering what I should do at that point, or should I mindfully, change my position?
Yeah, no, actually, as I mentioned, these bodily pains are unavoidable. So even the Buddha... Even the Buddha and the Arahants went through bodily pains. Now actual problems happens because of the desire to get rid of it. So we have some kind of a mental aspect that we are adding to it. So that is the real cause making us to suffer more. So
yeah.
If we can bear the bodily pain with a very sort of equanimous mind, so then we are only going through one type of suffering, that is the bodily type of suffering, physical suffering, but there is no mental component. So as we are, assume that as you've taken your own example, say there is a knee pain, so there may be a desire to get rid of that knee pain. So that is actually giving us some unhealthy situation in the mind, some uneasiness in the mind, kind of a resistance in the mind. And now there is even the, say, become even growing. I want to get rid of why this is happening, why it is still remaining there. So you want to be free from it quickly. So likewise, now uneasiness, restless situation happens in the mind. So now this restlessness, this uneasiness, this refusal, this unsatisfactoriness has to be understood. So once you understand that, then you have to be sort of honest enough to understand, now I have a kind of an expectation. I have a desire to get rid of this pain. So now that desire has to be recognized. So if we are able to recognize that desire, and if we can drop that desire, okay, I don't need to immediately get rid of this pain. Let me observe it. I can be patient with it. I can learn from this pain. So now you are taking from a different perspective. Now you don't have a desire to get rid of, but rather you change the attitude. Okay, now this is a pain. So pain is a kind of a object. So let me use this to understand suffering. Let me use it to see from all different possibilities. So likewise, now you investigate that pain. Now that the mental agony, mental sort of restlessness available previously, now it has gone. Now you can, if you pay your attention to the mind, so some uneasiness, resistance previously available in the mind now has disappeared. Now you understood, okay, now mind has calmed down. Mind experience some tranquility, even though some bodily pain is there. So that is where the third noble truth is. Third noble truth you need to look at in the mind. Okay, previously mind was going through some uneasiness, restlessness, but now it is not there. Now you are calm. Mind is now peaceful. Body may be aching, can't help, but mind is calm. Yeah.
So, following that question, but then the more I sit with that calmness, I mean, over time, I'm getting used to that calmness and I stay in that, isn't it?
Yes. So, more and more we are learning how to maintain a peaceful mind amidst all these difficulties, in a way.
Right.
So, of course, we always have to go through some difficulties, some day-to-day unsatisfactoriness. People are, say, for example, they are, say, your children. So we expect some sort of a behavior from them. Sometimes they are not behaving as we wish. So that makes us suffering. That makes us suffering. So that unsatisfactoriness, that sort of a burning in our own mind, if we are able to recognize it, so that is then we are operating the first noble truth. On the first noble truth. So we our own unsatisfactoriness, own kind of mental despair, we can recognize. So once we recognize it, then we need to understand why this is happening. So what is the cause? So there is a kind of expectation that we expect our children to behave in a certain manner. There's a kind of a framework operating in our mind. So there's a this is the behavior pattern that they have to behave. So likewise, we have kind of a preconceived idea. So that is the one causing the suffering. Now, if we are able to let go of that expectation, then we can calm down ourselves. It does not mean that we allow the children to do whatever they want. Rather, we can guide them, we can advise them. But still, we don't need to suffer if they are not acting as we wish. Can't help. So we have done our part, we did our best. We tried to put them in the correct track. Again and again, we did our best.
But if it is not working, then no point of suffering from my side. So, so likewise, even in our own day-to-day life, when we are going through some day-to-day unsatisfactoriness, so there also we can recognize the unsatisfactoriness, dukkha. And if there is a cause that we can recognize, that desire has to be let go of. And once the desire has been let go of, then we can experience some kind of a calmness. So that calmness also has to be appreciated. Typically what happens is that this calmness is never appreciated. We simply ignore it. So,
but I seem to be appreciating it because I can see the process, the beginning.
Yeah.
That is, I recognize that there is dukkha.
Yeah.
And then I act on it. And then when I get to the calm, I appreciate it. And but there is a subtle desire to get to the calmness, which I mean I'm working on it.
Yeah, yeah. So even now, if there is, so while dwelling in the calmness, while
yes.
dwelling in peacefulness, if we still desire something, so that still making a little, you know, kind of a nick, kind of a.
Dukkha,
exactly.
Yeah.
So if we are now assume that you are completely contented, then there can't be any kind of a desire, isn't it?
Yeah, okay. I mean, I suppose it I have to gradually work on it, isn't it?
Yes, definitely. So it's a kind of a gradual process. So there was a very strong unsatisfactoriness in the mind. Now it has reduced to a certain extent, but still there may be little unsatisfactoriness on which we have to work out, actually. Work on it.
I'm understanding how I go through the process, the three.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when I get to the calmness, I have to work on it. But thank you very much. I appreciate
yeah,
it. May you be well.
Yeah. Yeah. You are welcome.
Thank you. I'd like to invite Nanda to please ask the next question. Nandana?
Yes. Thank you, Jennifer. Bhante, my question is on dukkha. As you explained about the dukkha in its subtle states, obviously, it's very easy for someone to understand the dukkha or unsatisfactoriness in the unpleasant feelings or unpleasant experiences. So my question is actually on the pleasant experiences. The dukkha that we are supposed to be experiencing in our pleasant experiences, especially in the present experiences also, we have different types of present experiences. Like there can be some present experiences that are very intense. For example, we gain ownership of something really valuable, something that we really wanted always. And then suddenly, once you get that ownership, you start having some agitation in the mind because you want to protect.
Exactly, yes.
So that kind of pleasant experience, I understand dukkha involved in that.
Yeah.
Because we have that natural tendency to have that wanting to protect it, to safeguard it, protect it from others, and the fear that arises, somebody will damage it, somebody will take it, something like that. So that also I understand fully well. But the type of present experience I'm kind of still trying to, I'm experimenting with this present experience, this very subtle present experiences, but I'm still unable to sometimes see the dukkha in those. A good example, I want to just try and give you two examples actually. First example is like some kind of food that I enjoy. Let's say I'm having my breakfast. I'm enjoying it because it is a pleasant taste. And I am very mindfully eating. And I do know that this is I'm not going to be able to eat it forever. I'm just going to finish this breakfast at some point of time. And I'm mindful of the flavor that I have in my mouth. And I choose my food and I know, okay, I am going to eat it now and that's it. That's why this is my breakfast. And once it is done, it's done. And I have no fear of someone coming and grabbing it from me because I am in the safety of my own home. So at a time like that, I find it difficult to experience or to feel any dukkha in that kind of a present experience. That is my first picture.
Yeah. So actually, as far as I can understand, so we don't need to... Actually, there can't be any dukkha if there is no desire. Now, in this your situation, you are utterly mindful and you are eating. So at that time, your mind does not experience any kind of a desire. So since there is no desire, rather you are doing kind of an experiment. It is true that the body is going through some pleasant experience, but you are not attached to it. You don't hold it. You are not cling to it. So therefore, there is no mental unsatisfactoriness, uneasiness, because there was no desire. So you are not agitated, because there is no desire. So the various kinds of feelings are available every time, but if you are not attached to them, so there is no kind of unsatisfactoriness or suffering that we are experiencing. So the main thing is that if we desired it, then only the problem happens. So the problem is not that we always have to try to find kind of dukkha in the pleasant experience, in the unpleasant experience or the equanimous experience. At the very moment we attach to any of these three kinds of experiences, there the dukkha arises.
Thank you, Mother. That is exactly what I want to confirm.
Yeah.
Because I think I was born a Buddhist and I have always been taught that every experience, I mean, there is dukkha everywhere.
Yeah.
And in every experience that we have in our life. So it's through Shraddha or through faith, merely through faith, I kind of tend to always look for dukkha.
Uh-huh.
Even the pleasant experience.
Another dimension actually we can check out. That is the other point that Buddha mentioned. So whatever is impermanent can lead to unsatisfactoriness. So yadanichang tang dukkang. So whatever is anicca, whatever is impermanent, inconstant, can lead to dukkha. So even the pleasant experience, if you closely look at it, so it is not a single experience, but rather it consists of a group of minute experiences. Say, happy feeling, pleasurable feeling. It's not a single pleasurable feeling. It's a collection of minute pleasurable feelings, and each minute feeling is arising and passing away very rapidly. So each and every this kind of feeling, minute feeling, is subjected to this sort of process. So that means kind of a constant, it is arising and passing away. Constantly it is arising and passing away. So this is a very vulnerable situation. So therefore, we can't expect this kind of happy, pleasurable feeling to last for a long time, because it is a very vulnerable situation. We never know when it is going to change, when it is going to change to something else. So therefore, expecting lasting happiness, if we expect lasting happiness from this present moment, present experience, then we are going to be unhappy. But rather, once we know the nature, once we know the reality, so we let it be. Rather than we try to attach to it, rather than we try to possess it, rather than we try to hold it, we simply let it be. So the mind is peaceful. Mind has no desires. So we can be peace. We can maintain peace with this pleasant experience. We can similarly maintain peace even with painful experiences. Similarly, we can maintain kind of peace of mind even with the equanimous feelings. So various types of bodily feelings are there, but we are our, if we consider the mind, mind is peaceful. So that is why we can say the mind kind of unwavering, unshakable, irrespective of the type of bodily experience that we are going through.
So, is it correct to say, Bhante, that it is not the impermanence per se or impermanence itself of an experience that makes it dukkha, but it is the person who is experiencing it, if that person is not has not realized that it is an impermanent, that is when dukkha arises.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. So, he hasn't realized the reality. So he is expecting permanence in an impermanent situation. Sorry, in an impermanent situation. So there we are trying to go against the current. So
yeah, right.
It is constantly changing, but we are trying
to confirm that.
Yeah, in a complete flow of situation, we are trying to fix. But it is constantly flowing. Constantly changing, but we are looking at it in a permanent sense. So that is where the perversions is coming to the picture. Now everything is in a kind of a flux. Everything is constantly changing. It is inconstant. But unfortunately, we want to fix it. We are going through a kind of a fixation. We want to have a permanent something in this whole impermanent transient nature. So that is where the unsatisfactoriness is going to happen.
Right. Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
That is very clear to me.
Yeah.
Thank you. And I'd like to invite you to ask the next question.
Yes, thank you. Bhante, I have just a couple of brief questions. The first one is leading from the previous question. The advice that Buddha gave to Malika Buddha and the other Bahia, we can see beautiful paintings or beautiful nature and appreciate it, but drop it there as seeing as seeing. Would that be correct to say that?
Yes, that we can say so, because we are not making any story out of it. We are not making any formations in the other scenes. So, actually this dukkha, actually another three types are there, calling dukkha dukkha, viparinama dukkha and sankhara dukkha. Dukkha dukkha is the typical bodily pains and the obvious kind of pain. And then the viparinama dukkha is the dukkha, the unsatisfactoriness caused because of the change. Sankhara dukkha is the one happening because of our fabrication, because of the construction, because of the formations. Now, what you are saying here is that we stop that formations. We stop this fabrication. So therefore, that dukkha, that type of dukkha is not available there. So that is the approach actually Buddha is taking. So this sankhara dukkha, so what we, the constructions that we do, the formations that we do, the fabrications that we do, we are trying to calm down. So once they calm down, once all the fabrications are calmed down, once all the sankharas are calmed down, then mind is peaceful.
Yes, and even seeing a beautiful human being, I mean, yes, Buddha has told us how to break it up and Pilkul Bhavana and all this, but even if you see beautiful form, you can say it's a beautiful form and then drop it there.
True. Yeah, I mean, if we are not attached to it, if there is no desire to that beautiful form, then internally you can't feel any unsatisfactoriness. Beauty is beauty. So there's a very beautiful verse coming in the Nibbedika Sutta. There Buddha mentioned Tithanti Chitrani Tateva Loke Atitta Dhira Vinayanti Chanda. So these beautiful things remain as it is in the world, But the person, the wise person, actually he tamed the desire in the mind. So,
yes.
So the beautiful things are not the problem.
Absolutely, and yeah. The fact is that there are very intricate, architecturally and hand woven and handmade, incredibly beautiful
things
in this world.
Exactly.
So we cannot say that there isn't anything like that.
Yes. Yes. So actually, even I to give you even another example. Now you know Venerable Mahakassapa. He actually was after he became a monk, only 7 days only he was a worldly person. After 7 days, he became fully enlightened. That means, he became an arahant. But you know, there is in Theragata, now he was dwelling using practicing austere practices to the fullest, and he was dwelling in a very thick forest. Now, while being there, he during the night he is observing these fireflies. You know the fireflies?
Yes, but
so now these fireflies, as they are flying, so it's a kind of very beautiful picture.
Yes.
So, if you have been in a very, forest environment during the night, during a very thick, dark forest, so when these little creatures, flies, the flying here and there and flocking to a particular tree, it's like a kind of LED bulbs. It's a very beautiful scenery.
Yeah.
So, Venerable Maha...
They are beautiful even in this world.
Yes, yes. From
all the lights and observing. they have some beauty about them.
Yeah. So Venerable Mahakassapa mentioned that he see the beauty there. So while being an arahant, the only thing is that he see the beauty there, but he is not attached to it. There is no desire to it. So there is no raga, a lust in his mind. So therefore, if we say that the arahants or Buddha can't enjoy the beauty, that is, we can't say it is correct, because
it's not correct because
Buddha was served by the kings, very very rich merchants, so they have given very tasty food. So at that time Buddha enjoyment, but Buddha has experienced some pleasant feelings. But there is no desire for those pleasant feelings. So that is the difference. So that's a statement. Rasa patisangvedi cha bhagava, no cha rasa raga patisangvedi. So Buddha experienced all these very pleasant experiences. But on top of that, there is no desire for that pleasant experience.
Yes, Bhante. And when the Buddha was living in Savasthi, his monastery was richly decorated by all the late. And it is said that the whole floor was covered with most exquisite carpets, and there was nowhere to even put an additional piece.
Yeah.
So they were there with a lot of luxury which they were not attached to, but they experienced it without desire.
Exactly. We can say so. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So my other question is on the elements, and I have been lately trying to do that, and so that's why I'm asking you. So I watch my breathing, and I can of course see the particles of air when it gets more and more subtle, and so that is something I can experience, and also I can experience certain particles in the body. I can experience that. But my question is that, yes, we can experience hardness, softness when we are seated. We can experience it Buddha says, hair on the head, hair on the body, teeth, nails, skin, and so forth. We can experience that. But my question is, can we actually, when we go into very deep meditation, can we penetrate beyond, to the cell level? Is that a possibility, or is that not a possibility?
You can go to the cell level, but it is not really necessary, by the way. Now, if you are going for deep concentrations, then there's a possibility that you can even penetrate and recognize all these bodily parts. But
yes.
Buddha has given a different approach. So that is the element characteristics. So rather than we try to hold to these 32 parts, rather Buddha simplify it and give more subtle level. So that is the element characteristics. Now we are not giving the names, typical names like say the lungs, liver and all these different typical names. Rather we penetrate those typical conventional level. Rather we try to perceive, we try to understand very subtle, say, flux-like situation.
Yeah.
The elements.
That is,
so once we looked at all these experience in the point of elements, so it's a hardness, softness, roughness, fluidity, cohesion, movement, vibration. So likewise, so we are in a very primordial level actually operating. So there you can't have a fixed thing. There is nothing solid there. There is no any permanency. Everything is in a utter kind of a fluctuation, kind of vibration, kind of flux. So that there we are getting more advanced or profound understanding, and there are no conventions here. All the typical names, labels, conventions that we mind, so these man-made conventions, all are gone. So there is nothing to attach. So everything is like a flux, like an energy.
So my question is, because even in the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, he talks about solidity, the Buddha talks about solidity, and he also talks about the internal parts. I mean, if, as students, of course, we learn those, we did those parts and all that, so I do have an understanding of it at some at a point, but when we are meditating,
you can use it to some extent. Assume that
some
you,
extent,
yeah,
yeah.
Yeah,
because I have actually touched some of those internal organs, so I can use that past knowledge. But I don't suppose the Buddha expected everybody. I mean, he encouraged people to go to the cemetery and maybe observe those parts. I don't know at his time, but I suppose if we stick to the head of the hair and the teeth, nails, that kind of thing, and the breath and whatever sensations we feel in, like the vibrations and the particles, I suppose that should, is that enough?
Yeah, actually it depends on the person. Suppose a person is there who is a really lustful character and constantly he is burning with lust. For such person, going to a cemetery and maybe going through this Asubha Bhavana and all these things are fairly helpful. Just to bring his mind to the middle. So once his mind is taken to the middle, again he also has to stop. Because if he engages too much, he can even go to the other side. So that is the hating of the body.
So
that is not expected, basically. That is not expected. So once you are able to bring your mind to the middle level, there you now need to practice Satipatthana. In the more subtle level, that is where the element characteristics are there, the element meditation or the dhatu manasikara is there. So they are actually in the dhatu, you can't say it is a different component. You can't say it is liver, lungs, intestine or all these different components. Rather, they all become activities even, flow, vibrations. So on this situation, so the mind will completely lose the fixations. Mind can't maintain kind of a boundary of the body. So boundary is no more there. All the compactness view is broken.
But in the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutra, he talks about the solidity and the elemental characteristics, and he does mention the solid organs one day.
That's what I mentioned. So these solid organs and the, say, 32 parts, for example. At the beginning, assume that a person has a very fixed view. This body is mine. This body is something. It is very valuable. It is a single component.
Mm-hmm.
So, but when you are sort of contemplating using 32 parts, so that level of compactness is broken. Because now there is no single unit, but now it has 32 parts. Okay, so the very hard level of compactness view is broken. Now he has a 32 parts. Now he sort of has kind of a disintegrated view. Now even further we have to go using the elements. So once we are going to the elements, so it is going to pieces. I mean, it's kind of like a flux, like energy level, you can go. Now you can't even have any boundary line. You can't see even the distinction between even four elements. I mean, now at the beginning you are recognizing different elements. That is true. That is necessary. But more and more you observe it, even the distinct differences among the elements going to disappear and all appear like a flux.
Yes.
That is, to which actually our Lupusanasi used to say like a gojaya, like a flux,
yes.
like there is no demarcations, no distinct signs. Everything is changing. Everything is in a kind of fluctuation, kind of a transience.
So I can just limit myself to those vibrations, particles as
that enough. Yes, yes, definitely.
And try to go into the inside the body. I think
no, no, not necessary. Yeah, because the thing is, I mean, too much concentration is also not necessary. So if we are able to recognize all these vibrations, so that is more than enough. So
that is enough, because actually at the end of the day we are trying to accept that there is energy and flux and vibration, and that's all there is in this body.
Yeah. So this understanding has to be again and again experienced by the mind at a given moment. At a given moment, once it is coming to some culmination, then mind will naturally let go of. So you get the point. Now we may know all this information through science today. Even a college student may know it, but mind hasn't let go of. So what we do in meditation, in vipassana, is now we allow the mind to experience it as its own experience in a kind of a subconscious level. So we are sort of allowing the mind to learn from this reality. So as a result, at one day, so mind will completely let go of attaching to any of these and it will become free. So this freedom is the kind of a next level of our practice.
Yes, Bhante. And when we are practicing, we do feel all those things, you know, the vibrations and all these particles. So I think because I was trying to go deeper, and I thought now that's why I wanted to clarify with you. So that is not necessary.
Not necessary. It's a matter of familiarizing. It's a matter of familiar. You know, Buddha mentioned Bhavita Bahuli Kata. I mean, even though we see it once, it is not enough.
Yes. No.
So we have to show it to the mind, say 100 times, million times. So then only it will become matured. The same thing we need to do. I mean, today also we see it, tomorrow also we see it, next month also we see it, next year also we see it. The same thing. But there is a kind of a maturity happens in the mind. So at that time only it will let go of. It is like, say, you are filling a pot. Assume there's a droplet coming from a leaking tap. And you're simply keeping a vessel underneath. Only a single drop may comes out of it. Another single drop, another single drop, another single drop. But one day, the whole vessel may spill out. Same situation. Same situation here. So every day we are doing it as a daily practice. That's all. And one day, by the way, so mind may come to a culmination. And at that time, mind will let go of and it will find its own kind of a freedom. That is also not the end. I mean, that is one level of experience, actually.
So this Bahuli Kata is over and over. Is
exactly.
That right?
Exactly.
and bhavita is utilizing into practice.
Practice, yeah, development, we can say.
Developing.
Yes, yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, thank you, Bhante.
Yeah,
thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you. And I'd like to invite Rajapa to please ask the last question. Thank you again for Bhante, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear. You can speak a little louder also.
Okay. My question is, when I'm in the sitting meditation, I go to this place where I'm kind of tranquilizing my mind, it's very quiet. Then I'm not seeing the defilements to let them go. But in the daily life, I can see the defilements when I'm interacting with people and even if I'm watching something, and I can practice more letting go and letting go of the desire or letting go of whatever feeling that comes into my mind. So when I'm meditating, on the other hand, it's like tranquilizing, so calm that I'm not seeing any hindrances to let go. So as a practice, if I'm not getting anything, should I be bringing up so that I can relate it to the Four Noble Truths as Dukkha Satya, and this is like to do Dhammanupassana, or should I do it in daily life, or should I just, how do you practice the letting go, and when you don't see the hindrances because you are very calm,
yeah,
and your thoughts are very, you're not involved in the thoughts.
Yeah, so basically
so
that is, yeah, I mean, yeah, daily practice is a solution, because you know, In the typical sitting session, so we are too prepared in a way. So mind is fairly concentrated, too prepared, so no defilements are coming. But on the other hand, in the daily practice, we are moving with others, we are, say, looking here and there. And as a result, there's a higher possibility that mind get involved. Mind again generate various defilements and hindrances. So then and there, we need to recognize, by the way. So we have to be on guard. We have to be on guard on our mind. So there we recognize, okay, there is a lust, there is a resentment, there is a restlessness, there is a regret, there is a doubt. So
yes.
Likewise, so
yes.
Then and there we need to recognize.
So in the daily meditation, I shouldn't bring it up from my memory, right, to practice? No, I should let it remain in that calm position as long as I can.
And it depends, actually. So, say assume that a person who is a beginner, so they are assume that he is simply practicing, started his practice, and he is keeping his attention on the breath. And suppose after a couple of weeks, so his breath calms down. Okay, so this is one level of experience. So that is also he has to experience. And at this moment, probably, so this collected mind, the one-pointed mind, can be used to observe various phenomena. So rather than spending long time in this calmness, now one can use the collectedness, the one-pointedness of the mind to observe various phenomena. So that way we can take advantage. But on the other hand, assume that another person, he continues his observation for a long time. He has its own concentration. Using that concentration, he is observing his various bodily phenomena, various feelings, etc., etc. And at one day, assume that everything calmed down again. So now there are no bodily pains, there are no hindrances, the mind also has calmed down. There is nothing to attach. The mind is in a kind of a peace. So this peace has to be familiarized with. So you may experience it only for 1 minute, 2 minutes, that is not enough. That you need to cultivate, that you need to expand, say 15 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 1 hour. Maybe 1 hour is a good time. So to 1 hour, you need to familiarize with this calmness. So this is a kind of a letting go type of stage. Where there is nothing to hold, mind has fairly become free, nothing to attach. As a result, mind is calm. Mind is experiencing some sort of a stillness. So this has to be familiarized with. So therefore, it depends on one's practice that we need to, how to operate on this kind of a calmness.
Right. So if by chance I'm getting that only in about 30-40 minutes, I should continue it, right?
So assume that you have experiences a lot of observations. So you did a lot of observing. So you observed various pains, you observed various element characteristics, you observed various thoughts coming and going, etc., etc. And as a result of this observation, you understood they have the impermanent nature. They are simply coming and going. They are not permanent. They are not coming to stay. Rather, they simply go. So you have this as a kind of a profound understanding. If you have that understanding developed internally, and as a result, mind has now let go of everything without attaching, now you may be able to experience kind of a calmness, peacefulness in the mind. So if this is the peacefulness that you are talking, that is well and good, and you need to familiarize with it.
I'm not really sure, because sometimes it's coming very fast, sometimes before that I'm having thoughts and it takes a while. Some days it's very quickly I go to that calm state.
So that is the point. I mean, we need to be a little careful here, because so it could be a kind of concentration state. So concentration, now you know there are five faculties: Saddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, Panya. So among these five faculties, we have to well balance mindfulness, concentration and wisdom. So these three faculties we need to properly balance. So if we lead to very higher concentrated states immediately, so the mind simply loosen the mindfulness and wisdom and immediately go to those concentrated states. So those are not that beneficial.
Right.
So therefore, better you improve your, say, walking meditation, and then and there you observe various phenomena, element characteristics, and assume that while you are observing that, if mind has completely let go of all those, even in the walking meditation, you are able to maintain kind of a free mind. So that is a good situation. It is not kind of a concentration, deep concentration. Rather, you have experienced various bodily phenomena, various element characteristics, various thoughts, and they also have come and gone. You haven't attached to them. You have understood that they have the nature to come and go. And as a result, everything has ceased. Now you are experiencing some sort of a peacefulness in the mind. So this we can say you gain through proper practice. Not kind of a concentration practice, rather.
Right. Thank you very much, Mahdi. I understand.
Yeah. Okay. I think we are running out of time. Someone else also has raised their hand.
Yes, Bhante. Would you like to take one more question?
I can spend 1 minute, maybe.
Okay. Yeah. Darshika, please unmute your microphone. Darshika, you were unmuted for a moment and then looks like you're muted again.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yes, yes,
yes. Sorry, I did quickly. This is a situation I experienced 2 weeks ago. I couldn't really handle this situation the way I wanted. experience an abdominal pain. So as the pain was getting intensified, I closely watched it. I thought that the pain was originating with the pressure, started with pressure, and this pressure got more and more and then turned into pain. It was like as if people were pushing into a door, a single door in a room where there was lots of sound, and when they pushed out, the pain subsided. So the pressure intensified, became less, and then the pain suddenly got it went down, and then another day and another day. So both it happened, and then also at the same time, the pain was moving from one place to another. So but the pain didn't subside. It was getting worse. And finally, I had to go to hospital and had surgery for appendicitis. But I thought I had handled the pain well, and following surgery, 2 days or so, I was looking at the pain and it was not so bad because it was not as bad as the initial pain. But on the third day, I still had some pain. And then I couldn't handle it anymore. I really broke down because I thinking, why is it happening to me all the time, by me? And I was even feeling jealous of the people who didn't have pain. And I was, this is not my pain, just a pain, but, and also it is due to the cause and effect. But I couldn't handle it anymore because the video, the effort I took was either too much, trying to control it, or I don't know what happened. I knew, that it was not my pain. But I couldn't handle it. So when times like that happen, how should I react?
Yeah, so actually, as you have mentioned, so the moment that you recognize, so there's a desire and you are trying to possess the pain and you are claiming this pain as my pain, why it is happening to me, all others are quite comfortable, why it is happening to me. So that is where we are intensifying the pain. So that is where sort of increasing, and that is where we really suffer. But rather, if we are able to avoid doing that, simply seeing pain as pain, while keeping it to the, limiting it only to the physical pain without making any mental component out of it, so that is where we can stop suffering. So that is what we try to discuss today in the teaching session. So as much as possible, we need to look at it, all these suffering, objectively, without claiming them, without possessing them, without making it mine. So that way, I mean, pains are always there. The physical pains are always there. So we don't need to have a mental component out of them.
Yes, but sometimes because it was going on for 3 days and I had really tried my level best to handle pain as pain.
Yeah.
It was my, like last time, how you probably explained this out of the system bonus for younger. You said, about the fucking, yes, I forget the three components exactly now. Should I take and just build and done something else? Would I be better, or still would I have to pursue an answer?
Actually, you can take kind of a middle approach where, say, to some extent you can use pain as much as possible to learn from it, to understand its impermanent nature, etc. Assume that it is intensifying, you can't bear it, then you can actually, you can change your posture, you can get up and go for a walking, and likewise, you have to, you know, without going through, I mean, if you can go through this pain, that is fine. That is something that some people are actually doing. But it is not the only approach. So you can actually change the posture, and you can even see how the existing pain now calms down. It is now disappearing because of the change of the posture. And probably even you can watch the mind. So likewise, you can use in you can play in the kind of a wide range, and it is not necessary to see only one option is there, but there are many options available.
So I did the mind pasna there. I thought of the situation, why am I not coping this pain, but because I'm expecting to
So you can maintain some balance in the practice. So if you are struggling with it for a long time, that also give you kind of a strenuous type of experience. That is also not that balance. So rather, you time to time, you will kind of relaxed experience. You go for a walk and again calm down. And, you know, I mean, that way you are able to balance the practice. Rather than every day going through some severe pain and you are struggling with it every day, and it's a kind of a battle every day. So sometimes people take that approach, but it is not a must, by the way. So you can get a kind of a balanced approach where you persevere to some extent and as much as possible. And then suppose you change the posture and again you see how the pains are disappearing. And now there are new types of pains. I mean, there may be mild pains. Now you are observing them. So, I mean, the observation is the important thing. It is not, we can't say that you have to observe the very, very higher, severe kind of pain in order to understand. It is not so. Because all the pains are, I mean, coming and going. They have the changing nature. So this changing nature, the coming and going nature, they are transient nature. So this is the lesson that we are trying to learn, not their intensity, by the way. So with that, actually, we will conclude today's session. We will recite the traditional verses. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sambe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. එතාවතා ච අම්හෙහි සම්බතං පුඤ්ඤ සම්පදං සබ්බේ භූතා අනුමෝදන්තු සබ්බ සම්පත්ති සිද්ධියා එතාවතා ච අම්හෙහි සම්බතං පුඤ්ඤ සම්පදං සබ්බේ සත්තා අනුමෝදන්තු සබ්බ සම්පත්ති සිද්ධියා ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාගා මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු සාසනං ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාගා මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු දේශනං ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාගා මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු මම් පරං ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා සාදු සාදු සාදු